I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Bijou Podcasts.
I needed to point that out, that she did have the file and didn't look at it, because if she looked at it, she would have realized we didn't conceive naturally. And her argument was that our dates could be out. I knew our dates weren't out because we had a fucking IUI. Welcome to another episode of Couple Goals. Hey, I'm Stacey.
Hello, I'm Ben Jenkins.
And we are a couple that is sharing stories about our life, our relationship in particular, about our fertility journey. And I think we're both a bit on edge, and we've also put this episode off for a long time because today we're talking about miscarriage. So we might as well just put it out there, because it's just such a complex thing to articulate a lot of the time, that it'll be about how close are you talking to the microphone, or how you left something in the microwave overnight, or, you know, just some dumb shit like that I'm sure you can all relate to.
Well, I think that's the thing. Like, you start to learn through these processes and being so close with each other and going through all this stuff and analysing it like we do, to learn from it, that you realise that when you do have little niggles and things come up, that it's not really that. It's an underlying bigger thing that is really feeding into that and feeding the fear and the stress and the anxiety about things. And in this case, this morning, is coming in here to talk about miscarriage.
So we have started the couple goals community on Facebook, which is in the show notes if you are interested. And it's been really quite, I don't know, it's been an interesting process to have access to all of the stories. At the beginning, it was so amazing reading everybody's everyone's journey, and then over time you realize, just like your own experience, everyone's journey is so long. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. When we started that group, it's there for support for each other. It's, you know, it's not dependent on whether we're on it every 2 seconds of the day. Yeah. But we are the facilitators of it and make sure that everybody feels safe and welcome, and yeah, and everyone treats each other with kindness and respect. So we oversee everything, yeah, which we don't really have an issue with that, because it's quite intimate and it's it works. People understand their shared experience, they share experiences, everybody understands. But what I kind of didn't realize, which is quite a big process in your own experience, is to have that same level of longevity that you have in your own journey times 50.
I think it's for me, it's been really amazing to watch everyone on that community, like you say, being so open and honest about their journeys. And to me, it really highlights how important it is that people have an opportunity to connect to other people who are going through similar situations in life. And I just think that people are just being so brave in putting themselves out there by talking about their journeys. And like you said, it's not something that just happens quickly. It's something that is going on for months and, in a lot of cases, years.
Yeah, and that's the bit that's been a bit confronting for me, because you kind of stay really positive with your story in your own bubble and your own cheerleader or cheer squad around you. Yeah. But then when you are sharing, you know, when I read some of the stories that, you know, this is our sixth round or this, you know, it's it doesn't scare me, but it's just reality of people's lives, and It helps some ways to get perspective that, you know, you've had this part and you feel like it's so ginormous, and then you've got these other people that have been through so much. It just was something, it wasn't good or bad, it was just something I didn't expect to walk away from.
I know for me this morning, it really kind of highlighted, you know, how much we've been through on our journey so far. Like, I look back on it and, you know, there's, like I said, there's people who've been, you know, at this for years. We've just been doing it for just over a year or so, or nearly 2 years.
Yeah.
It just really highlighted to me how long that's been. And it's very easy for that water to pass under the bridge. And then when you reflect on it, you sit there and realize how much you've gone through. And in our case, you know, that it's made us really stronger and given us a much better understanding of each other in a time that was really early in our relationship. And we decided to take these big leaps early in our relationship. And it's really highlighted how much we've learnt about each other.
Yeah, and to be honest, I still don't think I'll ever be completely content with that journey. I think I accept it, and over time, I'm sure if we're lucky enough to meet a little person, or when, I should say, I'm sure we'll look back and be very grateful for it. But in the process of it, it still seems like a harsh reality. Like it's, you know, you can't help compare to friends or other people that just didn't have to learn those lessons this way so early in their relationship. But it doesn't help to think like that. And that's what I was going to say as well. You know, it's just a really important thing to not compare. But look, the point of me bringing that up was the big the big emotions and the big path that these journeys carry, and one of them for many of us is miscarriage. Now, a lot of you may have heard me talk about our miscarriage on the Think Girls pod channel. It was very raw. It was the first time I spoke of it anywhere, and the only time. I think I wrote a few articles obviously about it, but we're going to share our story about that today. It feels very emotional still.
Well, it's like we said, it's bringing up a lot already.
Yeah, and it is a part of the journey, and it's very tricky to begin the process of trying to create new journeys and to bring that part up. So you'll have to bear with us, or bear with me, because I'm obviously already very emotional talking about it. But it's important because, like I said, you know, the kind of segue from my point was that we've all been through so much, and that's just such a big part of so many people's journeys that are just so complex and so intertwined in every single next move you do. Like, if you haven't had a miscarriage, it really is an impossible feat to separate that experience from every next try you do. And you'll have moments of it being completely different, and you'll have moments of where you might have got more eggs this time, or you might have had a different kind of implant, or you might have had a different experience with injections, and there'll be all these obvious things that make it so different to the time maybe you had your miscarriage. For us, it was our first time we ever did IUI. It was my first pregnancy ever. Sorry, I've got a bit of a frog in my throat, so you have to bear with me. Water won't get it. Thanks, babe. I just really, you know, tried to separate, but at the end of the day, it creeps into your heart. Like it's your grief. And as my energy healer said, you know, grief comes up from experience. Like it comes up again. That's why we find sometimes birthdays or Christmas is so hard when we lose someone. Grief comes up through experience. You can't control when it rises. So, you know, you could be having one day of your 2 week wait of being really excited, and then just completely struck with fear around the fact that even if it does work, which is what's happened to me, I've been terrified of receiving a positive result, because then I'm also already scared of losing that, and I know the pain that I had. It's such a big part and such a catalyst for so much emotion and feeling that happens after in your journey to come. But it's so not, I know we keep saying it's not spoken about, and I know that it is more and more, but it really isn't dissected in the way that we want to dissect it today, and the way that I think we need to dissect it, because you can talk about the experience you had And you can say, I had a miscarriage, and you can come out and say, it was hard, the end. But if you don't talk about the intricacies of that effect every single fucking day afterwards, then you're not giving any of it really the level of power it has, because, you know, we just then kind of brush. That's the first step. But what about the steps of everything it affects from there, and how it shifts and changes you as a person and as a couple?
Yeah, I think that's a key observation there, is that the grief never really goes away. It'll fade over time, and that's, you know, that saying is true, that time heals all wounds.
It changes. It evolves.
But you know, it's key that you make that observation and have that understanding that the grief is always going to be there, and that's always going to play into things. So in those times where you're trying again, and you're in your 2 week wait, and you're really starting to get down and you know negative and wondering if this time is going to be similar, or you know, something bad is going to happen again, that it's important to realize that those experiences of the past are playing into that, you know, and they're having an effect. And it's
and also, though, I was encouraged to feel them too. I think a lot of the time, you know, friends or people that have not experienced it would suggest to me that they're separate, and I would go away and think about that suggestion because I was open to all suggestions, but then I would realize it's not separate because I'm the common denominator. I'm the mother of that child and could be a future mother. They're not separate experiences to me. I am one person that has experienced both. You can't separate that. Like, I was the mother to that little being, and I want to be the mother to whatever is coming my way. You don't get to separate yourself. Like, and that's the bit that people don't get. You're the carrier, you're the common denominator, and so you can't separate a lot of it. So you do need to feel it. And I think it's okay that you accept that even in times other people may have really happy moments or really exciting prospects, or this was a really good retrieval, or this was, you know, this looks really positive, I feel really great. Fantastic. But there are elements that you're going to feel in that are very normal and not all happy, because you're scared from things that have happened in the past, because the past is the only thing you've experienced.
Yeah.
And so much of this journey that we're on is things we are yet to experience. We're all living in a life of the future. Like, we're all living in, it's very much like my radio job. Constantly I was just waiting for the future to come. Like, I would live in Cairns, miserable for 2 years doing breakfast radio. I liked the job but hated where I lived. Constantly doing it for the future step, you know. And that's how we all live. And so it's like, you know, the only thing you have experienced and to go on is that grief sometimes. And so don't think you shouldn't feel that too. It doesn't matter that it's not going to be as positive as someone that hasn't experienced a miscarriage. You'll get your positivity when it's time for you to get your positivity, you know, like, so don't stress about that too.
As hard as it is, I think you need to, you know, these experiences is to not wish them away. And I know that can sound a bit crazy because you're going through a time that is, you know, pretty emotionally grueling. But all of these things in life, and we were talking about this morning, you know, about, you know, it's a little bit cliche, is that it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. And it's about what you learn as you go through these experiences. And as hard as grief is, and as hard as losing a baby is, you need to, you know, stay there with your partner and be there with your partner, talk it through, learn through the process, and get yourself ready for that, you know, next experience and that next attempt, and make sure that you still have hope in your heart. But not forget or push away or compartmentalize the bad stuff that's happened in the past.
I think also when I might be not coping, that your partner might be actually feeling positive, and that's something you've kind of both got to play a little bit, because you need to appreciate that just because you're going through a tough time, there might have been a spout, you know, you might have come home from work feeling really positive and I'm in tears. And I often find it really hard to get out of that and understand, or just at least have empathy for you when sometimes there's a positive, like the positive days come few and far between, and you've just had one. You know, it's, and I think the same thing goes the other way, that you might have had a positive day and that will help your partner.
Yeah.
But it's also important to bring them up, you know, and not dive back down into the what's it called? What's the way they go to the war and they get into the trench? Is it the trenches?
Trenches, yeah.
Yeah, go back into there, which is an issue we've had because we're both quite anxious people. I'm much more open and probably a little bit more resolute in my anxiety. You aren't. You kind of have anxiety, but it's really unresolved and not really been, not diagnosed, but you've never really had kind of a realization that you are anxious or you can be anxious at times.
I think everybody can be anxious.
Yeah, but I just think it's, that's true, but people don't look at it like that, I guess. And so when I get anxious, sometimes that can trigger you off in the times that I probably need you to not be anxious.
Yeah, and but I don't think that's my anxiety playing in there. I am definitely consider myself to be an empath, so I will go into it because...
I don't agree. I think it triggers an anxiety that you haven't quite dealt with.
Okay.
To be honest.
All right.
Yeah, but
this
that's...
This could be for a new episode.
But I do. That's what I was saying.
Look, we're figuring things out along the way.
I just think, yeah, I think there's something that... So sometimes that's hard because, you know, you might have had a great day, I've come home, and that triggers you instead of then you being able to kind of step up and try and cheer the situation up. Or
Yeah, I get it. It's hard.
You know, you both kind of... And like you said, there's empathy, but I don't think empathy is necessarily the most helpful thing in that situation if you know, you don't, it's hard. You don't both want to be down together. Mm. So it kind of helps that you're in different places, but you've got to try and be strong in that too.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not saying that like I have empathy and I do that. Being an empath for me, like, is that as soon as you're feeling a certain emotion, I get pulled into that. And it's not me empathizing for you. It is basically me being like some kind of X-Men character who sits next to you, and whatever you're feeling, I'm all of a sudden feeling. I've always been like that.
My mum's like that, and it shits me.
Yeah.
It absolutely shits me.
I'm a twin for...
And so is my mum. Actually, I've never thought about this.
Yeah, so... And I, even when we were younger, like I
oh
would...
Oh, my God, right.
I would definitely feel things that my brother was feeling and sit there and go, why am I feeling this? It was a particular time I remember because my parents split up when we were quite young, like 13. And anyway, when we got a bit older, when we were around 18, it was the first time that he and I had been separated for an extended period of time. But he wanted to go and live with my dad in Brisbane for a year. And in that time, and I stayed in Sydney. And in that time, there were several occasions where I was feeling, I remember once in particular, I felt really sad and I had no idea why. And then I called my brother.
How old would you have been?
I was 18.
Yeah.
And then I called my brother and spoke to him and, he was really upset. Like he was really lonely. You know, he'd been up there and moved up there on his own and, he was having a bit of a hard time. And then that's when I realized that, you know, I had that real connection like that. And the same thing happens with other loved ones, you know, for me. And that's why I'm sad. That's what I mean by empath. It's almost like a sucking of emotion that comes across, and then I sit in there with you, and that's something that I've got to, you know, that I've got to manage and recognize and go, oh, okay, this isn't me feeling this. This is what I've just absorbed, but I need to lift myself up and help you through it. Like you said, it's not by sitting there and mimicking the emotion that's going to help you through it. It's by being the opposite and
helping
which, you up,
which
you
is
up.
Something, you know, I've had to deal with that with my mum for years, and that's... It was really, and my mum is such a beautiful quality in so many ways. Like, it's really taught me to be sensitive and own my emotions and all that kind of stuff. So there's obviously positives to it. But at the same time, you know, I would have a breakup with a guy when I was like 18 and my mum would be crying. And you're like, fucking hell, like, can I cry and can you help me? And now I feel like sometimes that's the same thing with us. It's like you might come home chipper, I'm a bit upset, and then you're all of a sudden upset and I'm the one that's pulling you out of that.
Hi.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think back to the first point is that it is a good thing when you are feeling different things because you can help each other, unless you're in a relationship like us and we kind of have to navigate that a little bit differently. But it is, it's been tricky. So I guess there is an opportunity for many people to have heard the very raw take of our miscarriage. I'll put the link in show notes if you want to go back and listen to that. So I thought maybe it might be an opportunity for you, Ben, to talk about, explain what happened, and I'll just chime in.
Okay. So, yeah, it was, well, first of all, it was a real shock.
It was a year ago now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So around this time last year, and we were about to go and have our first scan to hear the baby's heartbeat. So we were at 7 weeks. Seven and a half weeks, yeah. And I think at the time for me, I was, you know, I had no reason to fear anything. I was just thinking, you know, this is the first time. Maybe I was a little naive to the potential downsides and all of the possibilities. And sometimes I tend to do that, is have a bit of blind hope and
but I never thought we would have a miscarriage, you know, regardless of the different feelings I was feeling a few days before, which we can go into. But I never thought about it. I never thought I would be that number.
No. I wasn't thinking about it at all. Like we've said before, it was like a miraculous, you know, conception. It was it was almost like it was a divine thing that we conceived on the first attempt. So I was still bathing in that, even at 7.5 weeks and having that first scan. I was thinking, this is great, we're going to go and get to see our, you know, hear our baby's heartbeat. Amazing.
Yeah, and quick timeline on that. November we went to the first fertility appointment. I lost my job, so things were pretty kind of tumultuous with my life for a few months. And then we tried in March, our very first attempt ever. Ben doesn't ejaculate, so there has been absolutely no other possibility for us to fall pregnant. Yeah. You can go back and listen to earlier episodes if you want some background on that. And so then we had our first IUI, absolutely no hormones, completely injection free, just giving it a go, absolutely no expectation. And we were lucky enough to get a very strong positive result early on, like really early on, 10 days DPO I tested, and it was like two strong lines.
Yeah. And insemination was a magical time, like our doctor brilliant. And the nurses and the...
We were seeing Dr. Andreatis in Newtown in Sydney. We were with Janaya. The nurses were brilliant. And, you know, you're right, we had this incredible experience.
Yeah.
We were so naive to it too. Like I'd never been through anything like that. So,
So that was the experience leading up to that 7.5 week scan. So I had no reason to feel worried, a little nervous.
And not only that, we had really strong HCG results, and you know, we were learning what they all meant. But every time a nurse would call me and give me a result of the blood tests, it was, you know, wow, Stacey, this is super positive. You know, like, so you're right, like leaning in, there was absolutely no reason for us to think that there was anything wrong. Nor did I know a miscarriage came from no heartbeat. So that's, you know, we'll get to that. But you don't know a lot.
So I just thought we were going to have that scan and we were going to hear our baby's heartbeat. Step one, here we go. First time to see our baby from the outside world. And
do you remember how I was?
You were quite nervous. Yeah.
Do you remember why I was nervous?
Not completely, no.
You have a pretty shocking memory.
Yeah.
I stopped feeling symptoms.
Ah, that's right, yeah.
Like my boobs stopped being sore. I didn't feel nauseous. I felt very different.
And it was like the day before, wasn't it?
Well, I had a panic attack the day before for no reason.
Yeah.
I was on the way home from Sunrise. I did my weekly segment there. It was in a cab. Telstra had an outage. Mm. I tried to call you, everyone, couldn't call anyone, and lost my breath in the cab.
Yeah.
Absolutely no idea why.
Yeah.
So by this point, you're waking up feeling how you are, and I'm waking up feeling how I am.
Yeah, yeah. In two very different places.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah. So we were sitting in the waiting room, and I do remember that. I do remember you being, yeah, very, very nervous and very kind of sort of short and just, yeah, very negative. And then we went into the screening room. And yeah, there was a lot of anxiety there, but I still had that hope, you know. And I think I'm a little bit like that. As someone at work who is the leader of the organization I work for, has this phrase, and he says he's hardwired for hope. And I think I've got something quite similar. So,
but half your luck. Like, I think that's the important thing to really remember in this. And I'm going to chime in because it's two experiences. But half your luck that you get hope. Unfortunately for us. And that, when I say us, I mean women, we feel different. You know, it's like I'm not being negative because I'm not a hopeful person. And that's the bit, this is the bit that was really shitty here, because it was like I wasn't being negative because I all of a sudden was just hoping, like lost my hope.
No.
My body felt different. I couldn't deny that.
No.
But I had no way, and I didn't want to feel negative. No. I wanted to be hopeful like you.
Yeah.
But your body didn't change.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't have a dildo camera stuck up you. Like, you know, it's so different. And it's not your fault. Like, I know I sound like I'm being mad, but it's interesting when you say it like that, like I'm a really hopeful person. It's like, yeah, so am I.
Yeah.
But I had a whole lot of other things to deal with.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
I think it's important to say that I'm not having a go at you by saying that.
No, of course you're not. And I'm not alluding that you are, but I also think it's as equally as important to say we, as women, we are also hopeful. Like, you know, sometimes it's very easy to be like, well, I was quite hopeful. You'd lost a bit of hope. It's like, yeah, too right I did, because my body felt so different.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, it's an experience, you react to an experience. You don't just automatically turn hope off because you've got less hope than someone else,
yeah,
is what I was just trying to say.
Yeah. No, no, I understand.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we were in that screening room, we were having the scan, and very nervous. And even, I think you knew it straight away. There was no flicker. There was no, like, this was a pretty solid setup there, so you should be able to hear and see everything at once. There was no sound. I didn't really know what I was looking for, but I knew I was, you know, visually, but I knew I was looking for a sound of a heartbeat.
And I think as well, we both work in audio, so there's the wave bit at the bottom where it's supposed to move. And unfortunately for us, we're very familiar with dead air and how bad that is in our jobs.
Yeah.
And we could see that there was no movement on that audio line, but also it was like this. So we could hear that there was an
silence.
Option for there to be something. You know, it wasn't like, it was like you, we knew that there was a capacity to hear something because you could hear that kind of background white noise, but there was nothing there. It wasn't like the sound was broken. You know what I mean? Like where it's like you can't hear that background. You know what I mean? So it was very obvious that the machine and the woman that was scanning was trying to pick up some sound. So it was awful. Like that sound is just awful.
Yeah. The sound of silence, yeah.
But silence with a fuzzy, with a hiss there, because you otherwise if it was just stone silent, you'd be like, oh, shit, the machine's not working or something.
Mm.
But it was so clear that it was working, but there was nothing to hear.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And then I didn't really know what was happening there. I knew there was no sound, but I think I still had this, maybe it was naivety, I don't know, but I still had that kind of, okay, well, we're not hearing it here. Perhaps there's something, you know, in the development side of things that we're not quite there yet. And that's what the doctor said afterwards, or the doctor at the clinic, who don't have your file, so they don't know everything.
They do have the file. Okay. She just didn't read it.
Okay. So, yeah, I still thought you know, that there was still some possibility that, you know, maybe it was just not quite fully developed yet and that we weren't quite there, because as she said, you know, it could be a little bit early to hear the heartbeat. And I think I took that and believed that a little bit, you know, and that we could come back next week and potentially hear that. But I know that, you know, looking at you, you were resolute. You knew what was going on exactly, and that this wasn't a good sign.
Well, because she didn't, I needed to point that out, that she did have the file and didn't look at it, because if she looked at it, she would have realised we didn't conceive naturally. And her argument was that our dates could be out, therefore it could be too early to detect a heartbeat. I knew our dates weren't out because we had a fucking IUI. So it was like, just the scan lady has uncomfortably walked out and said there is no heartbeat. She didn't ask us if we wanted a doctor. She said, you'll have to come back in 10 days. I demanded a doctor.
Yeah.
The doctor didn't look at the file, which would have said we were an IUI patient, and then proceeded to give us advice and statistics on a situation that did not affect us, yeah. that we weren't. So that's why I knew. I was furious that this woman was giving you hope on something that I knew was impossible. And also, on top of that, I knew how I felt.
Yeah, yeah.
And I couldn't deny it. Like, I couldn't. And it was awful, because we walked out of there and you had all this hope that we were coming back in 10 days. The woman actually said there's a 50% chance that we will hear a heartbeat in 10 days. And I was so furious because it fucked with my brain. Yeah. And I remember speaking to our fertility specialist a few days, or, you know, the next day after, and she was like, Stace, your gut's right. Not only your gut, but your brain. She's like, yeah. There's no, you know, you have to, if the woman said to do the scan again, we're going to have to go and do it again, because that's her, I can't go over her word. I'm not going to do that. She said, but it makes complete sense for you to be. And I remember we were having, we went and had some tapas in Bondi and just kind of chilled out and just needed a bit of a walk. And I remember talking to her, and my doctor, she called, or our doctor, and, yeah, she said, no, you know, everything you feel is very accurate. She mustn't have looked at the file, and there's, you know, there's not a 50% chance, let's just say that much. Yeah. So then she put us through waiting.
Yeah.
You know, like, we had to then wait, and we were two people. Even if I told you my stance, the doctor told you her stance, our doctor, that woman still put in hope in your mind. Like, you were still hopeful right up until that second scan. Well, that's what I felt anyway.
Yeah, no, absolutely I was. And, you know, I think that's, you know, something that I is like in me is to always look for the hope, and when someone offers it, I take it, you know.
Well, that was, and of course, like, I think that was the right thing to do in that situation. But I was just so annoyed that she separated us so much, because the day after I went away, I think, and so we were separate for about 5 days, which was good for us considering how different pages we were on at that point. But I'll never really get over the fact that she put us on separate pages unnecessarily.
Yeah.
You know, like, I really do feel like that was a time where we were quite distant.
Yeah.
You know, like, it wasn't. It
did drive a bit of a wedge.
A little bit. It was like this weird kind of, you're over there and I'm over here on a situation that is both of ours. It's just strange.
Yeah. So then after that happened, you know, we just had to sit there and wait to have a miscarriage. And that was just horrific. Like, you know, you've just got to sit there and wait for it to happen. And after a couple of weeks, it didn't happen.
I think it was almost a month.
Yeah, almost a month.
So I was walking around with a non-viable pregnancy, hoping that we would, you know, we would miscarry naturally.
Yeah, but that didn't happen, so we had to have the DNC. Yeah. And then, you know, for you, a person who's doesn't like hospitals, doesn't like those kind of procedures, that was a pretty tough thing to go through as well.
It was also, you know, I tried to do the natural approach. I've always tried to do the natural approach. And, you know, through this process, I've really realised and found a better balance, you know, like, I don't know. I think I knew in my gut that bubby wasn't coming out by itself. I think it wanted to stay, and it grew to 7.5 weeks when we had the 8.5 or almost 9 week scan. By that point, it had stopped growing at about 8 weeks.
Yeah.
which is weird that it grew without a heartbeat, you know, but it was all trippy and that fucks with your head too. You're like, ah, God, was it still trying? Like, you know, you think all these different things. But I learned so much through this experience because I knew I wasn't pregnant anymore. We weren't. I knew I should have got the DNC early. I didn't. You know, we ended up getting it anyway. We ended up not being pregnant. There was just so much that I learned about myself and my own gut, you know, that will forever be the greatest gift of that experience because I've carried that through every single day of my life since. But it meant that we ended up miscarrying just before 12 weeks. And I said to you, I'm not going into a second trimester. Like, I want that part when we do fall pregnant to be a different experience. Like, I don't want this to be the first time. So the hospital's great. Like, you could call up the day of and they kept, you know, put you in within kind of a couple of days. So that's what we did.
Yeah.
And that process was okay. You know, by that point, I think we had grieved a lot and it still came up, like, and it still comes up, but it was, the actual procedure was okay. Everything went really well. And you know,
and that's when we decided to take a bit of a break after that.
Big break.
And that's when we ended up, you know, sort of shifting gears and we went overseas and ended up eloping because we were like, okay, let's do something different, you know, for a little while. But, you know, and that wasn't, it wasn't like, oh, okay, we'll go and elope because this happened. Let's get some positivity. It was just a decision we ended up making. But
we kind of were making that in the process too.
Yeah, yeah.
But we needed a holiday.
Yeah.
And it was intense. We still were quite in grief and, and you know, and a lot, and the people, the crew we went with were also going through a bit of a tough time. Yeah. So it was a bit of an intense trip. But it was also really fun and we let our hair down and we got to stop thinking about stuff for a bit. And
I was about to say that, yeah.
Yeah, and we had probably, the most magical day I've ever had, you know.
Yeah.
That one day of just the two of us just being floricking? What's the word? Frolicking around New York City after being married in City Hall. You know, it was just epic, and I didn't think about that experience at all. You know, it was just nice. So we didn't come back and try until November, and that all happened in June, almost a year ago, exactly May June. So it would have been almost 6 months by the time we ended up coming back and trying again. Why do you think that happened? Just quickly before we wrap up, why did we wait so long, do you think?
I just think we needed a break. We were early in our relationship. And we wanted to take some of the pressure off, I think, for a little while and just enjoy each other's company and enjoy being in love and being a new couple.
And I was a pretty broken person, I've got to say. I was a bit depressed last year.
Yeah.
You know, I lost a lot of my identity.
Yeah.
You know, the Thinker Girls was really subtly wrapping up behind the scenes. You know, it's been a long process for that to wrap up, even though we officially announced that kind of towards the end of last year and then this year. It was really kind of slowly winding down at that time. So it was like I was also saying goodbye to a different baby of my own. So it was just, it was a hectic time. And that's the bit that people don't understand about miscarriage. The rest of your life doesn't stop, does it?
No.
You know, you've got all these other things that you're also dealing with in amongst this ginormous period of grief.
Yeah, yeah. It was an interesting time of life. A lot to learn and a lot to get through. We were definitely the stronger for it.
What do you think has been your biggest lesson from that experience?
I think it's just shown me again, and I've said this before, the power of communication and staying together and coming together rather than, you know, going off and doing your own thing and grieving in your own way. You've got to stick together. You've got to communicate. You've got to tell each other how you're feeling, what's going on, and keep talking and not resent the other for what they're going through. Understand that you're both going to grieve in different ways, but you need to talk about it and come together in that grief.
I agree. And I think also trying to make love or at least kind of connect in that real couple way too, where you can is important, but your body feels very weird. And I know it took me a while to kind of really figure myself out. For me, as I mentioned, it was just how incredibly powerful my relationship with myself became, you know. And I imagine this will be what it will be like to be a mum, and I've heard that from people, but I just will never ever question myself again the same way. When I know something, I know something, and I'm just not denying it. Like, and it just really honed that in and really made me make some big decisions after that about what was right for me, what was making me feel good, and things. I got rid of things in my life that were creating stress and anxiety. And it was just became really simple that I became very focused on wanting this baby, and that some parts of my life had to change. And that's really hard too, for me to go, I'm not going to be able to make this happen. And I'm not saying the miscarriage was my fault or anyone's fault, but at the same time, it made me very sure of what I wanted, and we want a baby. And I went, unfortunately, there's going to be some things that I'm going to have to sacrifice also to get there, to make sure that every day I'm feeling as anxiety-free and as kind of calm as I possibly can. And that was kind of friendships and obviously almost a business. You know, there was just so much stuff that I got rid of to start fresh. And that's hard, but it really gave me the courage to make some steps in areas of my life that I don't think I would have had if I hadn't have had that really refined view of how important trusting my gut was, because I was bang on every time with something so big, like a life or death situation.
Yeah.
I was correct about it. Just really honed in how powerful that is and to use it every day.
Yeah. Sometimes the universe teaches you the hard way, though.
It was the greatest gift, you know, but it was the biggest loss I've had. So it was just a very bizarre thing. But we see you. You're not alone. If you've experienced this, you know, if you want to share your story in the Couple Goals community, we encourage you to do so.
Yeah, come find us on Facebook.
Yeah, and that link is in our show notes. And we'll be back very soon with another episode. We're sorry it's been a few in between. We've had the flu, we've been interstate, we've, you know, kind of been everywhere and avoiding this topic, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely.
Not an easy one. No, it's not, but it's done now. We did it.
Yeah.
We've had a few interruptions along the way, a few arguments. Our owner is coming in for an inspection. He came early. We told him to piss off. So now we need to wrap this up and get that inspection done.
Yeah, absolutely.
Life, right?
Life, it happens.
Ben doesn't like pushing things to the edge. The owner's coming in 1 minute and he's now you've gone mute.
Yeah,
because
I like to be planned. I like to plan things. You like to push things to the wire and just live free and frivolous.
If you're enjoying this episode, make sure you rate it and review it on iTunes. It helps other people like yourself find us, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bijou Podcasts, the home of taboo conversations.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.